love rice pudding.
The CMU podcast in association with Seven Digital.
This week, Tidal, piracy and Madonna. It's the CMU podcast, looking back at the last week in the music business. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Chris. Hello, everyone, but hello, Chris.
You kind of ruined that because you said hello and then you went quiet. So I thought, oh, he wants me to say hello. And then just as I was starting to say hello, you said Chris. And we might edit that so it sounds like I crashed you. If we would, maybe we cut out a little bit of the silence you left because it was a bit of a long silence. And then it'll sound like I crashed you. And I didn't. In essence, you crashed me. And I think it's important that we start the podcast with people knowing that that's what's happening here.
Okay, well, good deconstructing of the inner workings of the podcast.
Talking about screwing up the podcast.
Which I did not do.
Let's talk about how you screwed up our podcast feed this week.
Well, okay. I was just going to say, if people noticed that suddenly 66 episodes of our podcast downloaded to their phone.
Somebody did on Twitter, at least one person.
I don't think anyone got 66 episodes downloaded. I got one episode downloaded, but it did mark all the others as unplayed.
I don't think the person who commented on Twitter wasn't saying that it had downloaded 66 episodes, but they got an alert saying there are 66 new episodes of the CMU podcast. And he or she, I can't remember, was of the opinion that that was more new episodes than were necessary in 1 week.
Well, that's correct, yes. But it was all old episodes. Basically, we had to swap the feed that pumps out the podcast to a different service because the podcast became too popular and our website can no longer cope with it. So that was why that happened.
It is.
So well done. It's basically all of your fault, listeners. If you will listen to this.
Yes.
We'll have to somehow work around that.
Our poor old server.
We don't do it for you to listen to, you know.
Our poor old server was struggling. Well, it wasn't the server was struggling. It was just our server hosting company was charging us lots of money.
Yeah, that was more.
I would have been fine with the server struggling and it being a really poor user experience. But us being billed more money every month, weren't having that. So we've shifted it over to a different platform that won't cost us lots of money. So everyone will be happy. It just meant that for a brief moment, it did look like we'd recorded 66 new editions of the podcast in one day.
Yes. But so, yeah, if something weird happened with our podcast this week, don't worry, it won't happen again.
But those 2012 editions, I mean, they're classics now, aren't they? I mean, we're 5 years on. The world has changed a lot in those 5 years. Go back and live the glory days of 2012 and all that was happening in the music business. And we used to cover a lot more, didn't we? In the early days, the podcast was only about 30, maybe 40 minutes. And I think in the first couple, we like covered about 8 stories.
Yeah. Well, the good news is all of those are gone from the feed now, so you can't listen to them.
Oh, right. So the old ones. Oh, so is it just, it's just V2?
Yeah.
So the 60 whatever. Oh, we've done 60 since we came back.
Yeah.
I suppose we have. I suppose that would figure, wouldn't it? About one a week. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So all the really old ones that we don't talk about.
Yeah.
We no longer need to talk about because they no longer exist.
Well, you can listen to them on SoundCloud.
On SoundCloud. So the fans of 2012 podcasts, the only service now available to you. Providing SoundCloud don't go out of business between us recording this podcast and this podcast going out, you can still listen to the golden oldie CMU podcasts on the SoundCloud.
Yeah.
Do you know, this week, we/I got accused of being snarky in our reportage.
Well, that's probably right. Sounds like us.
Someone took something we reported on and said they'd removed the snark to pass it on to their readers. So there you go.
What?
Well, you see, earlier this week, Jean-Michel Jarre, you know Jean-Michel Jarre.
I'm aware of him.
Jean-Michel Jarre gave a quite boring speech about the value gap.
Well, it's a boring topic. We've discussed it a lot on the podcast. Everyone will know that.
But it was a really quiet news day. Nothing happened. You'll probably discover once you find out what we're talking about on this week's podcast. It's been quite a quiet week for music business news.
Something else was going on. I'm not sure what.
And something else. Yeah, everyone was distracted by some other news story. So it was a quiet news day. So Jean-Michel Jarre had said something quite dull about the value gap. So I thought, well, we'll have to make this top story. Nothing else we're writing about today deserves to be the first story in the CB Daily. So I need to beat this up a bit. So I thought, well, I'll add some sort of, humorous chat.
Yep.
I wouldn't go as far as to say they were jokes. Maybe some informal chatter interspersed into what Jean-Michel Jarre had said. And this other person writing on their website thought that what Jean-Michel Jarre had said, I mean, to be fair, he was making some bold statements. It's just it was quite a dry presentation. And so they basically took the Jean-Michel Jarre quotes, which, to be fair, are his, not ours. So they're more than welcome to take them. But not only did they remove the CMU snark, they actually stated that that is what they had done.
What an unusual thing to do.
So I'm thinking of getting a new logo done. CMU, Music Business News with extra snark. Would you be happy with that as a new slogan? I don't think we even have a slogan anymore. Perhaps it's time we had a new one.
I'm sure we do.
We have various lines.
I have a feeling.
Well, there's the Complete Music Update for the Complete Music community. That's one of our bullets.
Is it?
If you go to the CMU sign-up page, where we're selling ourselves and we're doing the pitch.
Right.
We have the Complete Music Update for the Complete Music community.
Okay.
And we have...
I'm learning things.
Seriously Good News and Analysis. It might be Seriously Good Music Business News and Analysis, or it may be that by that point on the page, people have understood that it's about the music business.
Yeah.
Seriously Good News and Analysis that never gets too serious.
That's the one I was thinking of.
That's the one you're thinking of. So that's quite a long slogan, though, isn't it? So, I've said that. Music Business News with more snarks, quite long.
Yeah.
So, anyway, welcome to the CMU podcast, The Music Business Dissected with More Snark. What are we going to be snarky about this week?
Well, this week we're going to be talking the first story that fits, in fact, all of this. It all fits very much within that remit you've just given us.
You're expecting a high snark count on this week's podcast.
I think so. So coming up this week, we've got all the information that you could ever want on piracy. We've got calls to arrest Madonna for thinking about blowing up the White House. And first, we've got Tidal,
which has been back in the news.
Which is nice for Tidal.
This week, just in case you had forgotten, Tidal existed. It's a streaming service. They stream music.
Their big selling point is they have a lot of exclusives.
They do, and indeed, our most recent chatter on Tidal on the podcast, I think, was in relation to their Prince exclusive that possibly isn't an exclusive. And that's still very much a matter for the courts as to whether or not the Tidal Prince exclusive is a genuine Prince exclusive or not.
Well, a number of exclusives. Are any of them exclusives? We just don't know. But Tidal was in the news this week for two reasons. One, I think you would probably be happy about, and one less so. Basically, Tidal, its big selling point is that it has lots of exclusives from the likes of Beyonce and Kanye and Rihanna.
Basically, obviously, it's now
big
owned by Jay-Z.
So big names.
Well, it's Jay-Z's mates, basically, isn't it? And to be fair, Jay-Z's mates are big name artists. So that's a good selection of content. But it's basically people who hang around Jay's house.
Yeah, but that's the thing it uses to get in all the users and turn it into a really competitive streaming service.
And it's actually been a while now since they've had a really big exclusive. And the most recent big exclusive in the streaming domain, in my head, is still the Frank Ocean. Has there been anything of that scale since Frank Ocean's Apple Music exclusive?
No.
But there was a little flurry, wasn't there? There was a few months where around the Kanye album, and I think there was some Beyonce stuff and some Rihanna stuff, and there was about 6 months where, having promised all of these exclusives, they suddenly did start delivering, and there was album, 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 and a flurry of excitement amongst the fan bases of those artists to go for the free trial just to get access to that exclusive album that Tidal had.
Yeah, and after that flurry, that was when the last lot of user figures came out, where they were sort of a bit vague, but said they'd got 3 million people.
Yes.
Which isn't a lot.
No. Although, it still makes them probably, in terms of the paid-for streaming services, they're probably still in the top 5.
Yes.
Because, as we know, when it comes to paid-for users of audio streaming, it goes Spotify. I'm doing this visual now.
Yeah.
My hand's quite high for Spotify. Then it goes Apple. So we've gone down about half of the airspace in which my hand is making this demonstration. And then we go everybody else. And so you've got Deezer and you've got Gavera, both of which are still going for the time being. And you've got Tidal. So they are a long way behind Spotify, quite a long way behind Apple. But actually, they are pretty much alongside all of the other smaller services. Assuming we go with that official figure of 3 million, they then subsequently to that gave a slightly confusing thing where I think it was after one of the exclusives, they said that exclusive alone had generated 1 million new signups, maybe even 1.5 million new signups. There was definitely about 6 weeks where we were saying, does that mean they've got 4.5 million, or are they counting some people twice? So for the last year or so, it's sort of, well, the official figure is 3 million. There have been indications that it might be up to about 4.5 million. Although, when you talk to people who aren't allowed to talk about these things, but who give you certain indications, our perception of what people at the record companies were seeing, and often the people at the record companies, most people don't know these figures officially at the labels, but some people will, because often the deals that the labels do with the streaming services, some of their minimum guarantees and advances may well be likely linked to the number of subscribers. So sometimes the labels actually get the figures. And even if they don't get that, they know how much money is coming in and how many streams are happening every month. So they can sort of make an estimate. And so there were various people within the record companies who seemed to be at the very least implying, I may have been inferring, but I think they were implying that 3 million was quite ambitious, and actually they had considerably less than that.
Yes, so I think the general assumption is that when Tidal says it has 3 million, they sort of mean that's everyone who's ever signed up for it, whether they actually went on to pay or not.
Or, even if it's not that, it's everybody who is currently using the service, including the free trial users. And if they happen to choose the week after the Kanye album to put out their stats, then there may well be 2 million people who just signed up to listen to that album, but who have no intent of then going on to the actual paid-for subscription once the free trial is up. And so that's 2 million people around for a month or so who you're then going to immediately lose.
So the more conservative estimates that have come out from sources other than Tidal have been more around the million mark. However, this week, there was speculation by a Norwegian newspaper that actually it might be as low as 850,000.
Remind us why Norwegian newspapers are interested in Jay-Z's streaming service.
Because Tidal used to be called Wimp, and it was a Norwegian company which that Jay-Z bought.
Yes, so it came out of Scandinavia. It's quite complicated. It was mainly based in Norway. I think technically, actually, the company's registered in Sweden, but certainly it's a Nordic company. Jay-Z bought it, but it means that the Nordic business press, and this newspaper in particular, what's this newspaper called?
Oh, yeah, like I'm going to try to pronounce it.
Yeah, go on, tell us. What's it called again?
Dagens Næringsliv.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
Which is sort of the Financial Times for Norway. And they've been following Tidal. And there was a little bit of dispute last year between the previous shareholders in the company and Jay-Z's company, and so they've been following that story, and they've clearly been talking to lots of people. Now, some people have said, who have read this article, that some of the people who they suspect are the sources behind that story actually haven't been at Tidal for a while, and probably left Tidal not long after the Jay-Z acquisition, which means two things. A, their information is probably a little bit out of date, or it's more hearsay, it's not that they're actually seeing the figures themselves. B, some of those people were probably sacked after the Jay-Z acquisition, so they've probably got an axe to grind, and so they're going to be dissing Tidal whenever they talk to journalists.
Yes, and anyway, none of this matters because Tidal announced something big the following day.
Yeah, stop speculating about their user figures. Who cares?
Because they've
cares
got, they've about got 45 figures? Million now, so that shows you.
45 million?
Yeah.
That's a lot of users.
45 million.
That sort of sounds,
yeah,
given that we think they could have up to 3 million, but really we think they probably got closer to a million, they could have 850,000. And you're now saying they have 45 million. That's almost like Donald Trump has been looking at their user stats and has reached a conclusion
biggest,
about how many users they
the
have.
The biggest streaming service. Huge.
Not that presumably he has any... well, he won't be much of a fan of Jay-Z, will he? Because Jay-Z and Beyonce were big Hillary fans. Having said that, Kanye's in with Tidal. We all know Donald Trump and Kanye West, best buddies. So perhaps Donald Trump has been fiddling with the figures. Where are you getting this 45 million from?
Well, I did leave some words out of that
statement. Yeah, you did, didn't you? So this is the second story this week. So after everybody had got bored chattering about all that gossip from that Norwegian paper, which I actually think technically came out last weekend, maybe even on last Friday, but people were still chatting about it earlier in the week. But to gazump all of that rampant gossip, there was an official announcement from Tidal this week, which was...
It sold a 33% stake to US telecommunications company Sprint and opened itself up, or will open itself up, to Sprint's 45 million customers.
Which could potentially mean 46 million users.
Yeah.
Because it might well be that none of those existing million users are Sprint customers.
Could be.
Bearing in mind, Sprint's only in the US.
Yeah.
And Tidal is in many territories around the world. So you're even the 45 million was an underestimate.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably, I imagine everyone's on Tidal now.
It's worth reminding ourselves, there has been a lot of speculation that Jay-Z was hoping to sell either some or possibly all of Tidal pretty much since the week that he bought it.
And in fact, Sprint was one of the first companies that was touted as being a possible buyer.
Almost as soon as Jay-Z had bought it, there was gossip that he was doing some negotiation with Sprint, and we didn't know, well, was that what he was going to try and bundle it in, like a lot of streaming services do those bundling deals with telcos. But there was definite gossip at the time, though, Sprint were going to take a stake in the business and take some ownership in the business. But that didn't happen. And then there was endless speculation that Samsung were going to get involved. I think there was some brand partnership between either Jay-Z and Samsung or one of the Roc Nation artists and Samsung, or maybe all of them, can't remember. And there was speculation that
Samsung was involved in the Rihanna album.
That's probably what it was. And there was speculation that Samsung was going to buy half of Tidal or take ownership of Tidal. Then, of course, there was the Apple rumour that Apple was going to buy Tidal, which I think, didn't Apple strenuously deny it, which made us think that it was probably going to happen?
Yeah.
But it didn't happen. And there's been lots of speculation that Tidal probably needs to be bought. It's really expensive running a streaming service, especially a streaming service with no subscribers. That's even more expensive to run. And the feeling is that sort of Jay-Z and his celebrity shareholders don't really want to continue backing this loss-making business. And so for Tidal to grow, they need access to marketing, they need access to money if they really are going to go head-to-head with those incredibly well-funded competitors, Spotify on one side and Apple Music on another. So lots of people have been saying, for Tidal to succeed, it needs to be bought. Who would buy it? Well, it turns out that Sprint would buy a third of it.
Yeah, no more than that.
No more than that. So the other two-thirds are still available if anybody wants them. We could have a whip round. We could take the other two-thirds, or maybe a third. Keep Jay-Z with a third, so we still get all those celebrity connections. We could have a third. Sprint could have a third.
Yeah. Sprint is also setting up a marketing fund for artists, although what that actually means is not clear.
It was interesting that, of course, when Tidal got bought by Jay-Z and they did that dreadful relaunch with all those pop stars, they made a big deal, didn't they, at the start, that it was going to be the artist-friendly streaming service.
Yes.
We were, you know, all the other streaming services, they're clearly screwing over artists. We're going to be the artist-friendly service. And then they sort of stopped talking about that, and it was all superstar exclusives. But now, with the sort of statements that were put out at around the Sprint acquisition, there was a lot more talk again of being, oh, we're the artist-friendly artists, we're supporting the artists, and all of that sort of stuff. And as you say, there's this slightly ambiguous plan to give away money to artists. Now, that mean, you know, are they going to fund the next Kanye album, or are they talking about new artists looking for a bit of cash?
Yeah, we just don't know. I mean, more details of that will be announced in due course, I'm sure. But I think it's worth going back to this 45 million potential customers. What does that mean?
Yeah, so I suppose now Sprint have taken a stake, it means they're pumping in some money, they're taking some of the financial responsibility for the loss-making business. But yeah, the marketing potential of those 45 million customers of Sprint.
Yeah, exactly what they're offering isn't clear. Because obviously a lot of streaming services have gone down the bundling route, like Spotify with Vodafone and Deezer with Orange in France. And what we've seen, particularly from when Deezer tried to float, what we learned from that sort of deal is that you end up with a lot of people who've got your app on their phone but don't know what it is and have never opened it.
Which in the short term doesn't matter, because if as part of your deal with the telco is paying you a certain number of pounds a month for every customer that has the music component to their deal, in the short term it's fine. Actually, it's better because you're getting the money, but they're not streaming any music, so you don't have to pay the record companies and the publishers for any of the music. But in the long term, it's rubbish, because what it means is, and as happened to Deezer, is your figures look really impressive, but then it turns out that half of your users have never actually used your service. And when Orange decide that they no longer want to bundle your service with their sort of premium accounts, then suddenly you lose 3 million users overnight, because they're not going to go over to start paying you directly, because why would they? Because they've never actually used your service. So, I mean, Spotify, particularly that things like their Vodafone deal, really helped Spotify grow in the UK. So the telco deals can work, but they can also give you a little bit of a short-term boost, but no long-term growth.
Yeah, and exactly what Tidal plans to do isn't clear. So the wording of the press release was a bit vague in various points, but it sort of suggested that Sprint customers will have to pay for the service, but there will be exclusive content for only Sprint customers.
Yes,
so exclusives within exclusive. It's like an inception of exclusives.
Which only five people are allowed to listen to. So, yes, it doesn't sound like they're going to do a true bundle. It's more they're going to sell the product to their 45 million people that they have contact with. Quite what they're going to sell. You'd think there must be, surely, even if they're not going to bundle it into the Sprint telco package, they surely have to offer a discount, you know, like Amazon is doing with its Prime customers, get a discount on the full on-demand streaming service. So surely there'll have to be some sort of discount in addition to this super-duper extra exclusive content. But without the true bundle, and as we say, the true bundle doesn't necessarily deliver, but it certainly will give it a short-term kick. But if it is simply a case they're going to email all the Sprint customers or send them something in the post and offer them $8 a month with, I don't know, a new Beyoncé track, well, I'm not quite sure. I don't think they're going to get 45 million new customers, I think is the conclusion I'm reaching here.
No, but I guess if Sprint owns a third of the company, that gives Sprint an incentive to try to make it a success rather than it just being a sort of marketing deal that the phone company will sort of forget about within a week and get bored of.
It's interesting because I suppose the other option, we mentioned there was rumour that Apple were in talks to buy Tidal, and I suppose Google might, you know, I mean, nobody streams through Google Play, do they? So if Google decides that YouTube's not enough for them, perhaps Google could buy it. We know Facebook are sort of thinking about doing something in music, although I sort of think that's more user-generated content and sync and stuff like that. But they've definitely, they're putting a bit more effort into music licensing now than they used to. They didn't use for any effort in. Yeah. But therefore, it's sort of like, well, those are the people who could afford to buy Tidal and could afford to run it at a loss for a pretty substantial period of time. Apple could do it. Google could do it. Facebook would do it. I mean, why would they want Tidal? Well, you get the Jay-Z contacts. You get all the Roc Nation artists. That might be a reason why one of those would. But now Sprint has taken a third. It's sort of like, well, I mean, you'd assume that Google, Apple or Facebook would want complete ownership, but with Jay-Z still involved. And now you've got Sprint in there. It's like, well, does that mean that those deals are just not on the table? They're clearly not going to happen. And so this is sort of a last chance for Tidal to really gain some momentum with the marketing power and a bit of cash from this telco. So we'll see, I guess.
Yes, it sort of does look like this might have been just the best deal they could get, having tried every other avenue. But maybe in a year's time, Tidal will be the most successful streaming service and we'll all be eating our words. We won't.
It's good, I don't like eating words.
Still to come, Madonna and her yellow-purple bananas, but now piracy. Do you have any questions about piracy?
Do I have any questions about piracy?
Yeah.
I have many questions about piracy.
Oh, well. Do you know there's a website launched for you, then.
There is. Do you know what my main piracy-related question is?
Yeah.
Do you remember on V1 of the podcast, that we don't talk about anymore because you can't access it, well, you can on SoundCloud, but they might go bust.
Yeah.
Do you remember that we used to talk about the Digital Economy Act and the warning letters that ISPs were obligated to send out to file-sharing customers as a result of that piece of legislation?
I remember it well.
And your insistence that those warning letters would never be sent.
Yeah, that is something I've repeated on this version of the podcast.
And your continued bragging that as the years went by, when did the podcast start, the original version? Was it 2012? Or was it 2011?
2011, I think.
Okay, so 2011...
It must have been 2010, because the... Wasn't
I don't think we. I think it was post Digital Economy Act when we started. Anyway, the years went by, 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015, and you were bragging, ha-ha, I was right, these letters are never going out, you said. In fact, I think last year you declared victory.
I did.
Despite the open-ended nature of your statement.
Yeah.
Well, by the time this podcast goes out, the first of those letters could have been sent.
Could have. But may not have.
No, may not have.
May still not happen.
But we're expecting it imminently. Now, technically, these are emails. So if you wanted to be really pernickety and snarky, less snarky, more pernickety.
Also, I think...
You could say that emails aren't letters, but they are.
They're a sort of letter.
And they're more educational than they are warning. But,
yes.
But something is being sent, is the point.
Something is being sent. However, I think I still win because there's not the implementation of a three-strike system.
But that was never actually stated in the Digital Economy Act, in that it was all about sending letters, there was never a sanction. We should backtrack very quickly here, just in case there are some people listening who weren't listening to the podcast in 2011 and therefore don't know the backstory here. So in 2010, there was a Digital Economy Act.
Yeah.
Confusingly, right now there's a Digital Economy Act currently working its way through Parliament. So that's interesting. But it's not that Digital Economy Act. Back in 2010... there was this piece of legislation called the Digital Economy Act, and in there was a piece of anti-piracy legislation, because it's back when file sharing... This is pre, YouTube being the enemy.
So it's when piracy was still the enemy.
Yeah, rather than, you know, everyone going, oh, YouTube, everyone went, oh, file sharing. And so they got this bit of law written in the Digital Economy Act, which was, it was a variation of what at that time was referred to as the free strikes system for combating piracy. And the idea of free strikes was that if you identified somebody doing some file sharing on an internet account, you would identify the IP address of that account, and then you would go to the ISP, the internet service provider that controls that IP address, and you would force that ISP to send a series of letters to the customer using that IP address, the first of which would say, you're doing piracy, stop. And the second would say, you're doing piracy again, you really need to stop. And the third would say, if you don't stop doing this piracy, we're gonna... Well, then what?
Yeah, we never really got that far.
And in the French version of this, which actually did go live but then sort of didn't, was going to be disconnecting the internet. The stick was, if you don't stop file sharing and you keep getting these letters, eventually we'll cut off your internet. And so this graduated response system, as the music industry called it, was put into the Digital Economy Act, but without that final strike. There was no sanction in there. Sanctions were discussed at the time, but the legislation simply said, OK, we're going to force the internet service providers to send these letters because they won't do it voluntarily. They don't like sending letters to their customers telling them off. And so that went into the DEA in 2010, and then nothing happened. I think it was TalkTalk went to court to try and say that this was, I don't know, breach European law or something. I don't know. But anyway, nothing happened. And then in 2015, I think, no, 2014, the government announced this thing called Creative Content UK.
Yes.
Which was, I think that... It was this government initiative that the ISPs agreed to, the music and the other entertainment industries agreed to, and it was basically putting the Digital Economy Act into action. I think that was the announcement, when they announced Creative Content UK, that they sent us the press release with like 40 quotes in it from every single trade body, which started the running gag in the CME Daily of the one word quotes, which we continue to this day. So something came out of it.
Something, one good thing came out of it.
Not a lot came out of it. So this thing called Creative Content UK was set up. And in that, the ISP said, all right, then we will send out these letters, but they will be educational. So rather than being, hey, you're bad, stop this. They'll be, oh, by the way, you seem to be file sharing. Did you know that that's illegal? Here's some copyright law. Please stop doing it. Go and stream some music somewhere legit. And so that was Creative Content UK. However, the agreement was that before these letters were going to go out, they would do some education. They would educate the people about copyright and piracy. And that meant giving a load of cash to an advertising agency to do some god-awful adverts that went out during the X Factor.
Did little to educate anyone.
And a lot of money to a PR agency who came up with this the slogan, get it right from a genuine site. And of course, in order to educate the world about copyright and piracy and all of those issues, well, obviously, you'd get some artists to paint really bad pictures of famous pop stars on the side of buildings.
But not really say why you'd done that.
But not really say why you'd done that or why they weren't very good pictures. So that was stage one of Creative Content UK. That all happened. I'm sure you all noticed. You all remember that advert. And that's done now. And so we're now at stage two, which is these letters sending out. And we've not actually had any official confirmation of this, but it was the ISP trade press, which are, you know, an interesting read. They're never snarky. The internet service provider trade press. Are saying that all the ISPs now, I say all of them, all the big ones, so that's BT and Sky. Who are the big ISPs? TalkTalk, Virgin. Oh, and Plusnet.
Of course.
They're all getting ready to start sending out these letters. Their emails, they're calling them educational emails. We've not actually seen the copy of the emails yet, although there were some drafts circulating. I don't know if this is true, but Torrent Freak was claiming that the initial draft of the email from BT, I think it was BT, one of these ISPs, was basically listing the names of file-sharing platforms that the recipient of the email may be using and shouldn't be using, at least two of which no longer exist because they've been forced out of business. One of which was Napster, which hasn't existed as a file-sharing site for, like, 15 years and has been a legitimate digital music service for 15 years.
A genuine site.
A genuine site. But I think that got edited out. It was just that somehow Torrent Freak got sight of it before. So we're expecting these emails to go out anytime now. And what has happened this week is that a little FAQ site has appeared under the Get It Right from a Genuine Site brand, which we assume each of these ISPs are going to have a link in the letter that says, if you've no idea what we're talking about, go, and this website will answer every single one of your questions.
Yeah, so it's got questions like, what are P2P networks? And how do I get rid of P2P file sharing software? And how can I tell if something is copyrighted? The last of which, I would say, that's the particularly pertinent question. How do you tell if something is copyrighted? Does it answer it very well?
No. There's also the argument that this idea that something is copyrighted isn't really a correct expression. I mean, you write a song or you take a photo and then a copyright then exists in it once the work is created and it is out there in the public domain. Whereas I don't know, the word copyrighted suggests some sort of registration. And of course, there is a bit of copyright registration in the US, but certainly in the entirety of Europe, we don't have copyright registration. So even the word copyrighted, I'm always a bit uncomfortable with. And that's before you saw the answer to that question.
For the answer to the question is, get it right from a genuine site.
Yes.
Which is not very... Well, it's not very helpful in a number of ways. One, it doesn't explain what copyright is or why you should respect it or how you tell if a copyright exists in something you might have downloaded. And also, it gives you a list of genuine sites, many of which, like the file sharing networks you just listed, have shut down.
Yeah. I mean, it's unfair to say many of which.
Three.
Because they do list a lot of sites. And it's interesting, given that, you know, we know in the download domain, there are probably two, maybe three stores that people actually buy downloads from, and really there's iTunes. And in the streaming domain, there's basically Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, and then everyone else. But there was a lot of digital music services that you either have never heard of or you completely forgot existed, and they are all listed in this directory on the Get It Right website that the FAQs link to, although clearly they've not updated it in a while because the Sainsbury's download store is still there. And when you click on that, you get a page on the Sainsbury's website that says, yeah, this doesn't exist anymore. And then you've got, what are the other ones? Mix Radio, that famously got bought by about 9 different people and then was shut down. And so when you click on that link, it takes you to a Why Mixcloud is Shutting webpage. And then the video site Moozoo, that's my favourite, because when you click on that, you go to a GoDaddy holding page for the domain, because Moozoo doesn't exist anymore. So perhaps if Team Get It Right from a genuine site are listening, before these emails go out, assuming they haven't already, you might want to update your directory. There is also, there's a question where it talks, I can't remember the exact question, it's sort of saying, why should we respect copyright or something like that? And then it immediately goes into, oh, because the creative industries contribute so much to the economy and they employ all these people. And I keep saying this, I'm convinced that the way to talk to the everyday person on the street about copyright, bearing in mind we're in the social media age, isn't to say, oh, movie industry, music industry, all this economy stuff and jobs and blah, blah, blah. Everybody's a copyright owner. If you want to get people to understand and be vaguely interested in copyright, point out that they are copyright owners. If you put a photo on Instagram, you're a copyright owner. You own the copyright on that photo. If you're putting videos up on YouTube, you're a copyright owner. You own the copyright. If you're doing a blog post, you're a copyright owner. Talk to people about their copyrights, and then there's a higher chance that they'll take an interest in it, because it all becomes about them protecting their stuff rather than them respecting other people's stuff. And then you come in, once you've convinced them that copyright's good because it helps them protect their work, then you can say, well, copyright does that for you on the condition that you respect everybody else's work. So that's my advice. If you want to have any chance in hell of educating people about copyright, then do it that way. But they don't. No one ever listens to me.
No, they just say, get it right from a genuine site.
It is true. I would
not
never
helpful. It's not a good or helpful slogan.
I would never have come up with that. However much money the government had given me, I must admit that would not have been how I would have expressed the ethos of that campaign. But anyway, those emails are going out, so that's good news, because it means no more file sharing, no more piracy. File sharing even feels like a bit of an old-fashioned term now. Because, actually, people are even sort of slowly shifting away from BitTorrent, and they're using illegal streaming sites where there isn't really any file sharing going on, unless those streaming sites are possibly pulling the tracks off a BitTorrent network. So there is indirectly some file sharing going on. But even talking about file sharing feels a bit antiquated in 2017. But it'll all be gone by the end of February once these emails go out. So that's good.
Yeah, that'll be the end of it.
And I think it should go on the record that Andy Malt was wrong to say that the warning letters instigated by the Digital Economy Act 2010 of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland would never occur. Thee of little faith.
Ah, we'll see. Let's just quickly run through a few of this week's other stories in brief before we get to Madonna.
Let's see, are any of these going to involve some snark?
Probably. Okay. A judge has ruled on Prince's estate administrator. I think we discussed the other week.
Quite hard to be snarky about that, yeah, isn't it? A, it originates in a very sad story, and B, it's quite a tedious bit of technicality.
There was a bit of dispute. Now there's a permanent administrator.
Well, I suppose the dispute, this is what we did discuss previously, which is they reckon there are six people who still have a credible claim to be heirs to the Prince estate, most of which are siblings or step-siblings or half-siblings. And they all agreed on the bank that should be the corporate administrator for the estate moving forward. But we did mention this on a previous podcast. There was a disagreement on the individuals who should also sort of have an advisory role and be the go-between between... Oh, you have to be a go-between between, wouldn't you?
Yes.
A go-between between the heirs and the bank. And that half the heirs, well, actually four of them, wanted one guy. Two of them, including Prince's sister, wanted somebody else and they couldn't agree. And so the judge said, well, if you can't agree, let's just not have one.
Yeah.
I didn't quite understand why he didn't just appoint both of them. I think he did actually cover that in his judgment on the matter, but I just didn't really understand what he was saying, and there wasn't an opportunity for me to call him up and ask him. So he's just saying, actually, someone at the bank can be the go-between, and so given that they couldn't agree, and it wasn't that they couldn't agree, they both had objections to the other person's proposal, which actually we've subsequently seen his sister and half-brother are now making a legal claim against the organisation which was the interim administrator, the Bremer Trust, and the two advisers that have been advising the Bremer Trust, one of which was the one of the candidates for the individual administrator long term.
Yes, there are accusations of the mismanagement of a tribute concert last October,
which has deprived the estate of something like $7 million.
Yes.
And given that it's looking increasingly likely that about half of the Prince estate could as yet get handed over to the tax man for good old Donald Trump to spend on his wall, I would imagine.
Well, he's going to need all the money he can get for that.
So, therefore, the estate needs all the money it can get. So, yes, some illegal wranglings around the Prince estate this week. It sort of feels like everyone was quite nice about it all for a few months, but it does feel like the tensions are sort of coming out now.
UK Music has welcomed the government's new review on the creative industries.
They have. This is part of Theresa May's industrial strategy, which always makes me sort of think of... I don't know, Victorian era, but perhaps that's what...
Well, that's what we're trying to get back to, isn't it?
Perhaps that's appropriate. So Theresa May put out a new industrial strategy. It's quite long. I'm not sure anyone's read it. I think it was the Financial Times who was saying that it seems to be one of those classic government documents where there's all these great initiatives being announced, but then it turns out that actually 90% of them are initiatives that have been announced before in the last 3 years, and they've just sort of merged them all into one place. But one of the commitments made in this industrial strategy was that the government is committed to the creative industries. They're an important part of the UK economy. They're going to be an important part of the post-Brexit economy. And just to prove that commitment, just to prove just how passionate Theresa May is about the creative industries, how do we know how passionate she is?
Well, she's announced a review. And what could be more passionate than a review?
We love a government review. So it's a long time since we've had a government review of the creative industries, at least a few weeks. And so good to have another government review of the future of the creative industries. So that'll be something to look forward to.
Yeah, something else to look forward to. See that segue?
You did good, yeah.
The team behind Glastonbury have confirmed they're going to launch a new event called the Variety Bazaar.
But don't get too excited.
It will not replace Glastonbury, and it's probably not going to happen until 2021.
Yes, it's going to be some time away. Every time Michael Evis gives an interview at the moment, he always says something that then everybody interprets to being, the Glastonbury Festival's over, they're going to set something up in a zoo instead.
Well, to be fair, his quotes do pretty much say that quite often.
And then he said, oh, we're going to this event called the Variety Bazaar. And then people were saying, oh, my God, they're going to move Glastonbury away from Worthy Farm and they're going to put it somewhere else and they're going to call it the Variety Bazaar. And what's that about? But then both Michael Evis and Emily Evis, who actually runs the festival these days.
See, what happens normally is Michael Evis says something and then Emily Evis has to put out a statement saying that's not true. So they did an interview together.
For The Guardian.
So that she could stop him from saying anything that suggested they were shutting down Glastonbury.
And clarified that this plan that they've had for a while now to launch a second event, which will be organised by the same people, probably will happen, they were saying, 2021, called Variety Bazaar. If it works, don't quite know where it's going to be happening, not at Worthy Farm. But if it works, then they're thinking they could do it on the fallow years of the Glastonbury Festival.
Yes.
So that every time, every 5 or 6 years they don't do a Glastonbury. So 2018 is going to be the next fallow year. So I guess the next one would be 2024 maybe. And that they would then repeat the Variety Bazaar in those gaps. So we'll see.
Depending on when you're listening to this episode of the podcast, we may be about to or have already chosen the UK entry for Eurovision 2017.
Which is coming around already.
It is coming down already. I think it's going to be an interesting edition of the Eurovision Song Contest.
Well, you say that. You're sort of saying that no one's going to vote for our song, however good it may be.
And it won't be good.
Because
I've heard all six entries.
Because of bloody Brexit. But, I mean, it's not like we've been doing well at Eurovision since...
No, I suppose not.
Since the 90s?
No.
It's a long time since we've come, like... And obviously these days Eurovision has semi-finals and finals, and it's only because the BBC pays for most of it. We get straight to the final. And if it wasn't that technicality, we wouldn't have been in the proper Eurovision Song Contest for years now. But yes, so they're doing this pre-run show where the public get to pick from six.
Yeah, there's a choice of six quite bad songs and we have to decide which one's the best.
Which they brought back that element to it last year.
Yeah.
And for a few years before that, just some secret committee at the BBC had picked it. So so there are six songs to choose from. Again, being performed by artists. I still don't know what... I suppose I do know why. Who cares, I guess, is the reason why. Why don't we send Ed Sheeran? Surely if we send Ed Sheeran, we would at least come top six. Do you not think?
Maybe, but although it would be funnier for Europe if we sent Ed Sheeran and then no one gave him any points.
Yes, that would be funny for them. Not for us. We would be deeply, deeply upset.
I'd find it quite funny.
Well, you're very snarky. We know that. So that's going out Friday night. Is that right?
Yes.
So if you're listening to this beyond Friday night, then go on to the BBC website and find out who our Eurovision entrant is for 2017. Where is it this year? It's in Ukraine,
Kiev,
isn't it?
Ukraine, yeah.
Yeah, so if World War III is going to kick off this spring, Eurovision could be right at the heart of it. I think it'll be a nice touch to World War III. Yeah. It might be the thing that starts it.
Maybe. Maybe. I guess we'll find out.
In May.
Yes. If you want to read all of those stories in full, you can go to completemusicupdate.com/podcast. Find the show notes for this show, and all the links will be in there. Right, lastly this week, it's the big one. It's Madonna's imminent arrest for threats of terrorism.
Yes, either Madonna is going to be arrested, put in jail, or her music's not going to be played by a couple of radio stations. One of those is going to be the outcome of this story. This relates to last weekend's Women's March. Did you march?
No, I didn't.
Well, that's no good, is it?
I was very ill.
Were you? I didn't know you were ill.
Well, it was a Saturday. I don't need to talk to you on a Saturday.
So you were just ill for the weekend, and that's your excuse?
I'm still a bit ill now. You know, last week I said, oh, it's just the end of a sore throat, I'll be fine. It was the beginning.
Was it?
It's a sore throat that I've had since.
Well, there you go.
I've got tennis elbow as well.
So this is all of your excuses.
Some sympathy.
I don't think you need your elbow to march. It's the knees that matter for marching.
Well, I've pulled a muscle in my leg as well.
Have you really?
That's post-march.
You're sort of falling to pieces, aren't you?
It's not. It's not going well for
me
at the moment.
It really isn't. I'm quite impressed you actually came into the studio to record.
Now I've listed everything, all of my ailments. Yeah.
Well, I bought you that cheese sandwich, so you can eat that on your way home and then everything will be fine after that. Anyway, this has nothing to do with the Madonna story, but it was the Women's March last week, the day after Donald Trump's inauguration, and there were marches all over the world. It was a phenomenal event. There were marches here in London, but it was lots of capital cities around the world, but then most of the big cities in the US.
Yes.
But the biggest and the central march that it was all revolving around was obviously in Washington, D.C., and of course, what really bugged the Donald was the fact that that event got so many more people than the previous day's event, his inauguration.
Oh, I heard his inauguration was the biggest inauguration there's ever been.
It is. All 45 million Sprint customers were there to watch it. So it was at the Washington March where Madonna spoke, wasn't it?
Yes.
She was one of the celebrities.
She did a song.
Did a song.
She did a speech. And then there was some controversy, which is sort of... That's usually why Madonna's in the news at any point.
And also, if you're organising the Women's March, that's why you book her to speak.
Yeah.
Because you know she'll say something controversial. So she said something, actually, she said something uncontroversial that was then predictably taken out of context.
Yes. She said, within her speech, she said, yes, I'm angry. Yes, I'm outraged. Yes, I've thought an awful lot about blowing up the White House, but I know that this won't change anything.
Now, let's do the Fox News edit of that. What you would have seen.
I have thought an awful lot about blowing up the White House.
And now let's move on to something else.
Well, actually, I think in a lot of cases, that's what you've seen. I think a lot of news stations, she said that and then they cut away. So you didn't get the second part of of that saying, that's a ridiculous thought. And of course, we shouldn't act on it. But she then tried to give the context again in a statement.
On
Instagram.
So because that line had been taken out of context, various people were criticising her, mainly sort of right-wing and Republican politicians and or pundits on the news networks in the US. So there was a little flurry of controversy. And so Madonna took to the platform you would always take to deal with matters of this kind. She appeared on Instagram and she said...
Well, it was quite a long statement, but she said, I spoke in metaphor and I shared two ways of looking at things. One was to be hopeful and one was to feel anger and outrage, which I have personally felt. But she thought that the hopeful route was the better one, and her message in her speech had been to fight hate with love, and that's what we should all do.
Now, her firmest critic, so the long-standing Republican politician Newt Gingrich, was not impressed with Madonna's speech, nor her clarification.
No, he appeared on Fox News to give one of his traditionally measured responses, where he called for her to be arrested and given the maximum sentence for thinking about blowing something up.
Yeah, what is the maximum sentence?
I'm not sure which is a crime.
What is the maximum sentence for being misquoted? In Trump's America, who knows?
Well, yeah, we get to find out.
Waterboarding's coming back, remember?
But he said she was part of something bigger. She was part of an emerging left-wing fascism that Republicans should be prepared to protect themselves against this onslaught of abuse from... people who think about blowing things up.
Now, of course, around the inauguration weekend, there were a few Donald Trump protesters who did that, throwing stuff through windows of banks and Starbucks.
Yes.
Which is always counterproductive, A, because it just plays into the hands of your critics. B, also, it's often sort of the anti-capitalism events where people go throwing stuff through the windows of capitalist organisations like a Starbucks or a bank or whatever. But it's sort of like, yeah, but all these organisations are insured.
So and someone gets paid to fix it, so that's just helping the system.
They're all insured, so they'll all get the money back to fix stuff from their insurance companies, who then pass that on to us through what we pay. Plus, they'll take a commission. So actually, by smashing up a Starbucks window, you're helping the evil capitalists, not attacking them. So it's a stupid thing to do, but the point is he was sort of linking her in with the people who've been throwing stuff through windows.
Yes.
And saying these are all part of the same organised movement who are going to bring down all good, hard-working Republican voters by smashing a Starbucks window and metaphorically talking about blowing up the White House.
Yes, and then he allowed him to overstate the violent element of that protest, where he talked about them being held hostage in their hotel pretty much while people destroyed the streets around them, which I don't think actually happened.
He then got angry about people saying that he and others were taking her out of context, didn't he?
Yes, well, the Fox News anchor had pointed out that Madonna had given this statement about how, you know, she did not mean literally that she wanted to blow up the White House, and he suggested that she'd put that statement out because she realised that she was at risk of arrest now, and that's why she'd done that, not because she was trying to explain what she actually meant.
And this is where the banana that you referenced earlier in the podcast came into the conversation.
Yeah, it was a weird element of this interview where, having been very serious and stern-faced and like, it's an outrage, she should be arrested, he suddenly got all light-hearted and sarcastic. I love the left. When they say, I dreamed about blowing up the White House, they didn't mean they dreamed about blowing up the White House. They actually meant the yellow-purple banana. But they didn't want to say yellow-purple banana because it was too shocking, so they said blow up the White House. Give me a break!
I would be quite offended if people started suggesting we should be blowing up... what is it?
Yellow-purple bananas.
Yellow-purple bananas. Because I like yellow-purple bananas, and it upsets me to think people might blow them up. So I'm glad Madonna didn't say that.
Yeah, because that would have been too shocking.
It would. So that's part one of the controversy around Madonna's statements. But it's not just politicians getting in on the act, as I alluded to earlier.
No, it's radio stations with small listener numbers.
Yes, small, newish radio stations got angry about this as well.
Yeah, Hits 105 in Texarkana, Texas, has banned all Madonna's music from the airwaves.
Even Vogue?
Yeah, all of it.
Even Papa Don't Preach?
Yeah, yeah.
Even
yeah.
Like a Prayer?
Mm-hmm.
All Madonna songs?
All Madonna songs.
Wow.
So that's a bit of a blow for her. It said... The statement said all local programming, which suggests it syndicates content, and that content might have Madonna music.
Yeah, they probably don't have any control over so, whatever.
So they can't banish it entirely from the station. But the station manager said that not handing over royalties to Madonna would send a powerful economic message, which I don't think is true.
Yes, I don't think Madonna is living off her, I don't know if she's ASCAP or BMI, but whatever it is, those checks coming in from certainly one single radio station in Texas, or even the entire radio industry.
It's not like the radio industry hands over a lot, by the way, of royalties to artists.
Bearing in mind, in America, they pay nothing on the recording side, yeah. So she's not earning anything with the recording, it's just the songwriter royalties, which in the wider scheme of things, for an artist like Madonna, she probably doesn't even bother cashing the check. I mean, so I don't think that they have that much of an economic influence on Madonna. But hey, it got lots of people, including suckers like ourselves, writing about their radio station. So job done, yeah. I guess. Job done.
Well, with that main aim of our entire operation completed, I guess it's time to wrap up the podcast.
It is. You've got a cheese sandwich to eat. I've also brought in some very posh chocolates. Are they good? I was given those yesterday for talking about copyright. Can you believe it? I spent half an hour yesterday talking about copyright. I was given some posh chocolates for my trouble. So you can take another couple before you leave.
I will.
I've then got to rush off. I'm going to go and talk about copyright for 2 hours.
For chocolate.
Not for chocolate this time. To the students of BIM here in London. So I'm going to go over and talk all digital dollar stuff. Hey, talking about me talking about copyright, we've got 3 CMU Insight seminars coming up over the next 3 weeks, all around copyright. So starting with Beginner's Guide, there's some stuff on licensing, and there's some stuff on the music rights market. We've also got my masterclass coming up, which is all the big developments in music rights in the last 12 months. So that will be things like consent decrees and safe harbours, Andy's favourite, and maybe even those educational emails, which will definitely gone out by then.
Yeah, probably.
And a little bit of Paul McCartney and Duran Duran and the reversion right. So why not come to all of those? Go to cmuinsights.com, sign up. You have to pay. They're not free because, you know, free events aren't
And you
worth.
Can't pay in chocolate.
And you can't pay in chocolate. That's not an option. But hey, they're very well priced. CMUinsights.com, and I'll see you at the seminars and masterclasses in the next few weeks.
Yeah, and if you have a question about the music industry, it doesn't have to be related to what's being talked about in those seminars. As we've stated before, you can write it down on a bit of paper and hand it to Chris Cook.
Yes.
Or you can just say it to his face.
Or you can email it.
Or you can email it to cmupodcast@unlimitedmedia.co.uk.
And we will dedicate a chunk of podcast, maybe next week, certainly the week after, if not next week, we will do another of the questions that have come in through the events and through the email on an imminent edition of the podcast.
Yes, so get those questions in, and we'll be with you again this time next week.
There may be 62 more editions appearing in your feed between now and next
week. No, it will be fine.
You're not going to break it again.
I'm not going to break it again.
Good.
It wasn't my fault. This podcast was presented by me, Andy Malt, and Chris Cook. It was produced by Matt Peaty. And for more on CMU, you can go to completemusicupdate.com.
Recorded at Unique Facilities, the CMU podcast is an Unlimited production in association with 7 Digital.
I feel nourished.